session number 11063, rule 3.
Mr. Byrne, rule 3.
The drums were level with the rail, and then when you got further up north, as you know, these here metal oil drums, there's about an inch lip round them. Well, that filled up with water, which froze. So consequently, you had to walk from drum to drum, and in the dark, it was very difficult, because you had to watch that you didn't get your foot in the hole between the drum, or your foot went down and you were stuck. But they did ring a line up. Oh, but I must go back. I'm sorry about this. Very sorry. But when we were in Greenock, they said as we were going north, we'd have to have Arctic gear. Now, we went ashore. I don't know where we went, but we went ashore and got this Arctic gear. Well, we got a great big duffel coat, which was made of, like, some sort of a fine gabardine that were treated. And then it was lined with what were then called an oil silk. It was like a very fine silky material that was treated with a kind of oil. I think it was rather expensive in its day. And the top half of it was quilted. Lovely made, really heavy. And then the bottom, for the bottom 2 foot at 18 inch, was just a solid sheepskin. The hood fastened across the front round your throat, and then at the top was the clips to tighten the hood up over your head. It was heavy, it was ungainly, but I could never ever grab it for design and quality. It was really fantastic, heavy, and it but it worked, and it kept the wind out of you. They also gave you like a sleeveless leather jacket that you saw the army people wear. Theirs were just quilted, but these were lined with sheepskins. And they also gave you for your bunk a large, I would say nearly double bed size sheepskin, and they told us if we lost it, it cost us £3. I think if I'd have got back to UK with that, I'd have given the £3 to keep it. It was a beautiful thing, it was lovely on your bunk, but that went with the ship. They also gave you some leather sea boots. I take a 6, being a small fella, and they just had 9s, 10s, 11s and 12s or something like that, huge sizes. Anyway, I got the smallest size, but there were no way I could wear them as they were. Apart from that, they were shaped at the top, high at the front and low at the back, and at the back part, the low part, was too long for my legs. Anyway, I tried bending them over, and then some of the other lads, the army gunners, said they'd do it for me, and it took 3 of them to bend the boot over the stiff leather. The quality of the leather was out of this world, the weight was. But that's what saved my feet in the long run. We'll come to that in a bit. When we were doing this training, as we left there, they'd given us comforts that were knit by ladies, and I got a pair of seaboat socks and a jersey. Now, the seaboat socks were made out of oiled wool. When you got hold of the seaboat socks and you nipped them, they left the grease on your hands. Well, I didn't wear them straight away as we left for Iceland. I put them on later on. I was wearing my seaboat socks that he showed us with, and this, that and other. And anyway, we got on our way to Iceland. I think there were about 8 or 10 ships at convoy, and there were 2 of them small ones, taking all the time to get there. And I think it took about 5 days, we had to go about 7 knots, because some of these ships couldn't make 10. One night we got a lot of depth charges. It was the first time I'd heard a depth charge. I didn't know what it was, these loud bangs. I also remember we got 27 of them. I found out afterwards the submarine must have been there for them to drop 27 depth charges. Then after a few days we jogged on, and I was sick again, and the weather was getting colder. But it was a fun, you were at sea. This is what you're joining for. This is what I'd always wanted to do. On a night, the skies were really lovely and clear. And you were hungry. You eat well. You eat what there was. You're hungry, and you slept. But you were getting tired with 4 on and 4 off. But On a night, he'd let you have one man on, so you got 5 hours sleep. Anyway, we got to Iceland, and we're Iceland. And I always remember this, it was funny, because, as I said, I am a bit superstitious. And I was coming up to empty the remains of the meal over the side, the gash bucket, or the rubbish, as you'd call it. They call it the gash industry. And somebody said, "Hey, Titch, look, there's Iceland there." And I also remember that. I said, "Oh, yes, I've seen it before." And I'd said that before I realised what I'd said. It was a stupid thing to say, but I said it at the time. Anyway, we went on through on the Iceland coast and through the fishing boats and into Reykjavik, and we anchored there. And I also remember, because we had to do watches, and the mate said to me, if he were going in the wheelhouse, and he said, "If anything happens, anything, any noise, shout me right away. This is bad holding ground for anchoring." I didn't know they were good and they were bad. But when we were going up to Iceland, this was the first time I'd been in convoy, and the mate said, the captain said, "Keep your eye on the Commodore. Watch for aircraft, but keep your eye on the Commodore. If there's any flags flutter up, shout immediately." He was very human, very tolerant. And he said, "I got into Angervik, flag, sir," and you automatically pick the glasses up, and bit by bit you learnt what they said, and you described the flag to him, and he said what it was, and he dashed in the chart house and had a look at the usual, what each bracket of flags meant. But I must go, sorry about this, I'd like to go back. When we were in Lockyer, there had a change of gunners. As I said before, Kelly, Bernard Kelly, I think his name was, I think he came from Doncaster. He had 3 first trippers, and when these blokes came aboard from shore, they said that for Russia it were a bit much to him for 3 first trippers. Anyway, I were on the gun deck, and he went down on the stood on the deck cargo, which were lower down, and he shouted, "Hey, Titch, I want you. Being smallest, you're always Titch, you've no option, you don't get your name." So I went down, and he said, "You don't want to go ashore here, do you?" I said, "Why?" "Well," he said, "one has to go off." He said, "3 first trippers go to Russia they don't want. It'll be a rough trip." He said, "But I'd rather you went with me. You can go off if you want." I said, "What's it like ashore here?" So he said, "There's nothing ashore here. There's nothing." He said, "A while since a fella deserted. It's 20-odd mile from the railway. A fella deserted here about a while ago, and after 3 days living rough, he gave himself up. He'd like to come back." I said, no, I've got a ship, and I'm with you. I want to go with you." He said, "Good." So with that, he said, "Go back on deck." So I went back on gun deck and did what I was doing, I forget now, most probably oiling something. And then all of a sudden he called this other lad and he said, "Get pack your gear, they're going ashore. There's nothing wrong with you, but they don't want 3 first trippers." And so they brought another lad aboard, called him Bell, Jimmy Bell I think his name was, Glasgow lad. He lost 2 legs later on. I've since found out that he died in his 50s. But a nice lad. He had a daughter, I think he had a daughter about 3 or 4 years old at the time. Last time I saw him was in Murmansk Hospital, and he was in a poor way. Anyway, sorry to go back to that, but that were, I had the option of going to Russia the first time, and I said I would go. Strangely it may seem, the second time I went to Russia, I had the option, and I said I would go. So I could have never blamed anybody for what had happened to me. It was my own choosing. Anyway, get back to Iceland. We anchored in Iceland, and you couldn't get ashore. They said the Icelanders weren't friendly, and you had to do watches. The German aircraft came over spotting, see what we're in, and you watched them, and you didn't do anything, and you picked your binoculars up and looked ashore. Iceland weren't blacked out, and you've got to bear in mind this was 42. We'd been blacked out since 1939, and this, that, other. Anyway, we decided to do some fishing. Well, I'm not a good fisherman. There's not much worse in the world than me. And they got some thick line and some pin. I think I had a pin, I'm not sure. Yes, we all had pins in his housewife. Anyway, they bent these pins and stuck some bits of meat on, and you put it in the water. But they caught about 27 fish. I had a go, but they even put the bait on the line and put the line in the water, but I never caught a fish. They all caught a fish. And then they sent me to go wash them. Well, I'd never wash fish. And on this ship, you had taps on your wash basin, but they weren't connected up to anything. Your water came out of like a pipe, and to get it warm, you put the pipe under a steam jet, turned the steam on, and the steam heated the water, which you poured back into the wash basin. And that's how you washed. There were no way of bathing. There were no baths. You bathed in a bucket, but where you bathed was in this peak, and it was terrible cold. It was cold when you were in Scotland, never mind when you got to Iceland. But if you didn't wash and wash your parts with sweat, you didn't keep warm. You had to wash your feet, because if you didn't, you couldn't keep them warm. But you found out that you didn't take your pants off to wash your feet. You took your shoe off, your seabolt and your sock off, slipped it out, pulled your pants up, washed one foot, dried it, and then put your sock and your shoe back on, and did the same with other foot. Because virtually where you were, it were equivalent to washing on deck. And that's no fun in cold weather. As I said, accommodation were really rough, but the ship was 17 year old. It were an old tramp, and it had just been adapted to tech gunners. Anyway, we were in Iceland, and then they said we're sailing, and so we came out and formed in two lines and jogged on, come out of Iceland and turned to starboard on the coast of Iceland and through the Denmark Strait. It was foggy and cold. Convoy were going very slow.
How big was the convoy?
I'm not right sure. Eventually, I think the convoy was 20 ships, and they lost about a quarter of it. The history books will tell you, but I think it was about 20 ships.
This is PQ-13?
PQ-13, yes. I didn't know the number of it then. Anyway, we sailed on and went on steady and up through the Denmark Strait, around the North Cape of Iceland, and then back down to the coast, and we went on. And we'd more or less, we were 24 hours out of Iceland, and all of a sudden the convoy got orders to turn round and make for port at utmost speed. We were told the Tirpitz was coming out, so back to Reykjavik. We thought, oh well, we'll get a couple of nights good sleep in Reykjavik. Well, we just got to the gates of Reykjavik and going to go through the boom, when they said, oh, the Tirpitz has gone back. So you went out again. So that were like one day there, a day back, and a day out. So after 3 days sailing, you were back at where you would have been. Anyway, then the convoy formed up, and we got going literally up the edge of the ice, although I didn't know it at the time, up north. You did your watches during the day. You watch for aircraft and submarines. We were on the bridge all the time, and
could you see the edge of the ice pack?
No, we didn't see the edge of the ice pack going up the Norwegian, up the Greenland coast. No, we didn't see that. I don't know how far we were off it, but we didn't see that. And we appeared to have about four destroyers and two trawlers for escort. And it was quite interesting. All of a sudden, the Commodore had run some flags up. Our ship, Collins, they called the man that were in charge of it, he was designated as Vice Commodore if the Commodore got hit. We got quite good at reading flags. I just remember one day the Commodore put something up, and I picked the glasses up, and I just turned to the mate. I said, keep closed up. But what I didn't realise, well, the skipper were at the side of the mate, and the skipper said, what did you say, Gunner? And I just said, the mate said, what did you say, Gunner? I said, keep closed up. That's what he says. And the skipper burst out laughing. He said, at least we're teaching you, boy. I said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. No, that's what you're here for. Keep a good lookout and help. And they were quite good. They'd run you, say, come on, get in the chart house quick and I'll show you where we are. And the skipper just took this opinion that there were no way you could give any secrets of your trip away, because there was nobody you could talk to. He was the only man I ever sailed with that treated his crew and his gunners as if there were someone. You were just all there, and you had your job to do, and he were in charge, and he spoke to you quite good. And I know one time we were up there and somebody brought him tea and biscuits. They brought it on a saucer and two biscuits. He had a biscuit. He said, "Yeah, boy, have a biscuit." I got a biscuit, like a Mary biscuit it was. I said, "Thank you, sir." Anyway, you did your watches, four on, four off. Sometimes at night they'd say one man on until they get nearer. And then as we got further up north, it got colder. And as I said, I'd never wore underpants in my life. I don't know whether that should be in the story, but I hadn't. The times, and it were getting cold around your vitals, and so I got these here long johns out. It were in my kit. It were real to get them on. Boy, we were on the way from Iceland to Russia, and we, as I said before, we turned back to Iceland, to Reykjavik, and then turned back again. So that put 3 days on the journey. We set off then up. More or less, as far as I understood, skirting the ice up the Greenland coast. I don't know how far we were off the ice, but we had, as I remember, we had 4 destroyers and 2 trawlers. Now, the weather got very bad and very cold, and it was at this time going up there that we heard on the radio that the commandos had raided San Nazaire and breached the wall there. That was a highlight, because it was something that came on the news, and it was one of the first positive things of that time of the war. We went on, and it was just bad weather, roll about, watch on, watch off, go on deck, and you didn't take your clothes off when you turned in. You took your boots off. You never put the light out in the cabin. You put your boots where they were. You laid on your bunk with your duffel coat over the top of you, and then when you wanted to wash your feet or anything, you washed them one at a time. As I said before, it was like washing outside on the deck, because it was that cold. The toilet froze up and everything froze, and then the bit of water you could get through down aft, that froze up. You couldn't have the stove on at sea, because that gave sparks out with the wind that would have give your position away. And so the cabin, he ended up then with the ice on the inside of the cabin wall. When you laid in your bunk, your breath, you know, when you were kids and you were at school and it were a frosty morning, you played at smoking with your breath. Well, your breath came out like that was in the cabin with your clothes on. And then, as I said, when the water froze up, you had to go midships to get a couple get water, well, to get your tea mash midships, you had to go for that. And I remember one day the galley boys were getting some fresh water out of the tanks, somewhere getting it out of the tanks because the pipes had frozen up. I thought it was a bit funny, but I did enjoy the drink of water on deck, even if it were ice cold. It was really cold with the water. And then one night I had a bad scare. I was walking on deck, and she'd given an unexpected roll, and I missed my footing, and luckily my leg went right down between the battles, and she didn't ship a big heavy sea there, because if she had done it, it would have smashed my leg, because I was stuck with my leg. But if my leg hadn't gone down between the battles like it did when I lost my footing, I'd have gone right over the side, and there's no way anyone would have known you'd have gone, and there's no way you could have stopped yourself, because the drums were level with the deck. Anyway, we went on north and roll about and this, that and other, and watch on, watch off, watch for the flags. That was the only interesting thing, we'll watch for the flags. They watch the other ships. The second mate used to say, "Keep your eye on the Commodore while I look at the ships." And then the mist came in, and they were having difficulty finding the position. The skipper and the mate were both doing it together to try to get a fix. They didn't right know where they were. And then the weather broke, for want of a better word, the weather broke, and we got a tremendous storm. Now, this was my first trip to sea, and after that I did 3.5 more years at sea, but I never ever got in a storm like that. The mate said it was a bad one. He'd been at sea all his life, and he said it was a bad one. And one day I was on the bridge, and I was looking at this ship opposite. And as a stern went down and a bows came up, she was clear to about just short of a funnel, completely out of the water. And then when she pitched and went down again, the stern was completely clear, a good third of the ship, nearly half of the ship. And I said to the mate, "Cool, Mr. Mate." He said, "Yes, boy." I said, "Just look at that there, it must be bad on that one." And so he looked and he studied and he said, "Yes, but have you thought what this one would look like if you were on that one?" And I thought, "Good heavens, this one's doing the same." And it will, just like going up and down mountains, you steam down one side of one sea and then up the other side. And she groaned and moaned. And then one day I went down aft, and I was coming up on deck, and I said, "It were a, I'm not a shipwright, but there were, the steering was be chains that swung across the well deck." And I said, "Ooh, that cargo's groaning, and them chains are groaning like mad." Well, it must have been important, because the mate said something, sent the relief man down, the skipper came up, he said, "What is it, boy?" The mate said, "Tell him." I said, "What is it, boy?" So I told him, and then they called the bosun. And when I looked out again, looked down aft, there's the bosun and the mate with safety lines on, tightening the deck cargo up and checking the steering. The skipper said, "If the steering goes in this weather, we'll be in a hell of a state." Anyway, the steering didn't go, and as I said, we went on north, 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 and cold, cold, cold. And then one day the convoy got all split up with the weather. There were ships here and ships there, and the trawlers, they were stationed on the quarters, one on the starboard quarter, one on the port quarter, and in the daylight you could see there's a trawler there, and it would take best part of a quarter of an hour before you saw it again. How they went on, well, ours were a decent sized ship, about 4,000 or 5,000 ton, I think it were, I'm not sure, but they were only 600 or 700 ton. Life must have, aboard them must have been, well, they must have been wet through and hell. We were uncomfortable. Our mess where we slept were terrible, and everything was, the cook were cooking what he could. Anyway, we went on, and one thing led to another, and then the convoy got split up, and I don't know how far we were off of Russia, but we're getting nearer, put it that way. And then 9 o'clock one morning, I'd been on 4 to 8, and we'd had his breakfast, and we had to clear the tins out at the food came from amidships. And I went on deck, and just as I went on deck, I looked up and I shouted at the same time as somebody else, "Aeroplane!" And that were on port quarter. I always remember it, because it were a twin boom aeroplane. It were I never knew Germany had any, but it turned out to be a Blohm & Voss. Of all the aircraft recognition they've shown us, they'd never shown us that one. And it wasn't unlike a Lightning fighter, which we saw later on. It was, we'd seen pictures of them. And with that, the Bofors opened up with fire, and they seemed to hit it, and as they hit it with one shot, the far away boom seemed to tip, and they hit it with two. They seemed to hit it with two out of one clip, and that just went off round the starboard quarter and round and away. It had smoke coming out of it, and I suppose it got home. I don't know, we all said we hoped it didn't, but you look back now and you think, why should he die? But that were it. And then the skipper said, "Well, now they know we're here." When they were on bridge, then he said, "Up in the gun pits now, boys." He said, "You'll have to do your watches up there." He said, "They knew we were coming from when we left Loch Ewe." He said, "The planes that came over Loch Ewe would be watching the planes. They knew we were going up to Iceland. The planes in Iceland know where the ships have gone. They haven't gone down to England, so they know we were coming up here." So with that, it were be very, very careful and all that sort of stuff. And then it were, as you said, we were farther north, it were really cold. Then he started giving us a tot of rum in the watches. Halfway through watch, he called you down and he poured you a glass of rum and he said, "Drink that." Well, I want a big drinker then, but he just gave you this rum and you're glad to get it. He didn't wash the glass, he called the other fella down out the other gun pit and gave him one, and he said, "Now you'll be better for them." Kelly were on the other watch with the other seaman gunner, and Bell, who'd replaced the lad that went ashore in Loch Ewe, was on the same watch as me with opposite gun pits. Most of the time I had the port gun pit, but for some reason or other, a couple of days later, I were in the starboard gun pit. I don't know how I got swapped over, because most of the time I were in the port gun pit. And as I said, it were watch for the come, watch for this, watch for that. And the ships were, we were at one part, we were all completely on our own, and then you saw a mast and you shouted a mast, and he'd see another ship, he'd call them over. But before that, I were on in the gun pit, and I saw this ice coming, and I said, small ice ahead, having read books on the sinking of the Titanic. I said, growlers. And the skipper said, yes, you're right, boy. So he shouted up, he said, watch for them and tell me which bow they're coming on. I don't want to hit them. So it was a matter of, you watch for the lumps of ice coming, and told them, and they zigzagged and turned round them. It was quite interesting with that. And then I think it was 2 days after we were sighted with this aircraft, and we'd had this storm. This storm don't last as long when you talk about it as it did when you were at it, because whatever you did were a struggle. You caught whatever and it were a struggle, and you'd struggle to do everything. Your food and everything were a struggle. You just, to move were anything at all. Anyway, one morning the weather seemed to moderate, and then I've read since that it often happens in the Arctic. You get a terrible storm and then you get a beautiful day. And we got a beautiful day, lovely calm sea, blue sky, and it was more like it was cold, but it was more like a summer's day. You'd never have thought that the weather could have been so heavy, so strong, and then it dropped down to this, just as if somebody turned a page over or something. Anyway, we saw ships, and the skipper marshalled them together and told them to take position here and there, and there were about 5 or 6 ships. And then all of a sudden I said, wreckage, and I saw wreckage, and it were big planks of wood, and what's that? Nobody knew what that was. And then a while after, the radio officer came, one of the radio men came out and gave the skipper a note. I also remember he had a beard, never spoke to him, and he said that the skipper went in the chart room and came back. He said, gentlemen, I've just had word, I think it was the Empire Ranger has been bombed and is sinking. He said, very sorry, but we can't help her, we can't do anything, just hope.